Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Dee Vahorja Agus Falcharov. Thank you for joining into Capital Irish Radio today. You are listening on 106.1 FM, and we come to you every Sunday morning at midday. We pre-record our programme, of course, which is quite nice on a Thursday evening in an Access Radio. And Marion Greenis is the boss today, and she'll be telling us how many minutes we have to go and left and whatnot. And I've got a really important and lovely guest in the studio with me today, Jennifer Whitty. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Alice. Important. Ooh. That sets
you up.
I'm feeling a little
now.
Bit intimidated by that.
Oh, I always do that to my guests.
You're very good.
I always say that. It's so funny.
Our heads, we can't get out the studio.
But first and foremost, I want to thank our sponsors, who are Susie and Peter McGuinness, the Wellington Irish Trust, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. And don't forget, you can come out to the Hutt Valley Irish Society Sunday, the last Sunday of every month. We have a potluck dinner, and it's great fun. The kids usually sing, and there's lots of people to chat to and meet new people, all the lovely people from the GAA, the young people who've come from Ireland, who are just delighted to meet people who've been here for a number of years. Anyhow, before I start chatting to Jennifer, I just thought I want to quickly run through what's happened in Ireland over the last week. And of course, as you all know, if you've been listening to the radio, it's all been about the President of the United States, Joe Biden, going to Ireland to find his relatives' homes and to... It was a diplomatic visit, of course, because of the anniversary of the peace agreement, but also personal genealogy. So he met the Irish leaders, and he traced his own family roots in Carlingford, Dundalk, Ballina, and the people were out in thousands to greet him. They really were overjoyed to see him. And his great-great-great-grandfather, Edward Blewitt, made the bricks that constructed the pillars supporting the building in the cathedral in Ballina. And then off he went to Knock. And there he was he was outside of your partner's shop. Is that right, Jennifer?
Oh, a little bit. So my partner, my civil union partner, Cathal Lennon, his family have a cafe in Knock for three generations. So I think it was his grandmother who set it up when she came back from New York.
Yeah.
She was an Irish woman from, I think, from the West. And then she was very entrepreneurial, set up the cafe. So it was a bit of a landmark in Knock.
Yeah.
And then Cathal's uncle took it over. And now, sadly, it's a little bit on hiatus, but POTUS tweeted them. Biden tweeted passing by the Lennon Cafe with a photo, and all the people queued up, saying
amazing
greetings from Mayo.
So, wasn't that fantastic? It was just lovely to see.
Not every day that the president is tweeting from outside your ancestors' business.
And then there were thousands of people on the River Moy, in Ballina, cheering for him and holding up the Irish tricolour and the American flags. And I tell you, it was a real celebration. You see, when JFK came in the 60s, we didn't have the media, but we were all very excited. But this surpassed everything, I think. It was amazing. Anyhow, that was the news. There was hardly any other news reported on in the Irish papers.
Dominate.
But at least that was good news.
Yes.
And he made one big faux pas. I don't know if you heard about it, Jennifer.
Yeah, of course.
He called the all blacks the black and tans.
It went down like a lead balloon.
Which will be remembered, I'm sure, the next time they go to play in Ireland.
It just shows how little they follow rugby in the States.
Exactly. But Jennifer, I'm Jennifer Whitty, and the name Whitty is, you're a Dublin person?
Yeah, it's a Wexford name, actually.
Oh, is it?
It's a Norman name, like a lot of, you know, the Burkes to the Fitzgeralds. So, yeah, if you go way back, that's... They were Normans who were Vikings before that, but settled in Wexford, and a lot of them didn't really leave.
Right. And I'm going to take you back to your roots a little bit, but Jennifer, first I'm going to introduce you as now the Associate Professor of Design at Victoria University here in Wellington. And that's just a really prestigious job. We all know now, you know, you don't get to be something like an associate professor unless you know a lot about your whatever subject you're talking
making
about.
It up as I go along.
But it says on your profile, as an educator, designer and researcher, you aim to usher in a new era of deep systemic change for global fashion that is expansive and diverse, rooted in social and environmental justice, which of course is just what everybody wants to hear now, what everybody is aiming at doing in this world where we're all a little bit scared about what's happening to the environment.
True, there's certainly a groundswell of change. Yeah, and it's been, you know, we growing consciousness about what we need to change, where kind of seeps into our lives. And, you know, and it's in a lot of the decisions we make about our material culture, what we choose to purchase or not.
I know.
Because, you know, our garments are from the earth and will return to the earth. Yes. So often when we just think of fashion in this very little, like the only, you know, people maybe associate it with shopping or a moment of, you know, the kind of fluff and the candy, you know, the kind of the short term, that's really doing a huge disservice to something that is grown, the crops, whether it be, you know, natural fibers, cotton, linen, you know, we think of our ancestry or our traditions in Ireland of linen producing.
That's right.
Or, you know, derived from oil industries. And basically when we use it, then it has to go somewhere else. So it has to return either as a toxin or a fuel to the...
I know. You know, well, I was very moved and frightened when I saw that Sunday program, you know, the one that you did on TV a couple of months ago. Mm. When you talked about the landfills and how full they are now with used garments. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is.
It's pretty overwhelming. Mm. Yeah, they did go to the site of... So the program is very good. If anyone hasn't seen it, I think it's still available on TVNZ. Yeah. And they did a great job, I think, the producers and the journalists, on really giving a sense of that entire life cycle and where those garments are ending up and what kind of ramifications they have for us as people and planet.
I know.
But yeah, we're buying something like... 4 times as much as we did 20 years ago.
I know, and we're all guilty. I mean, I'm as guilty as the next person. But now, the more I listen to and the more I read, I think twice, luckily. Mm. So that's a shift. So if we can all get, you know, if we can be bombarded with that message and make that shift, it will hopefully help.
Yeah, and think a little bit more just about where we're buying it from or ask questions. Like we've got a really thing. Yeah, the ethical, and from a human and an environmental, you know, who has it impacted on? Who, you know, if it's $5, $5, why?
Why?
You know, exactly. And any of us that kind of know how long it takes to make something.
I know.
You know, things kind of don't start to add up when you start to go, has this person been paid a fair wage?
Yes.
And if they haven't, why not? And, you know, we can kind of hold these companies a little bit more accountable.
Yes.
Or we can hold on to things a bit longer and we can cherish them and we can develop different practices of use. Because a lot of us are good at buying clothes, but we're not good at using or wearing clothes.
And especially jeans. I mean, that was the big thing that I've been reading about. How many liters of water? 70,000 or something, liters of water.
Absolutely
mind. One pair of jeans.
Yeah. They're a very thirsty crop.
They are, aren't they?
The cotton that goes into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then sometimes that cotton is grown in arid places where, you know, it's just taking water from fuel source or food sources. And so, you know, there's things now like which we would have done always traditionally, you know, rain-fed cotton, or you know, that it is maybe more organic as well. There's so many layers to how things could be better for the soil, for the air, for the environment. Yeah, it's and really multi-layered and complicated.
Whether you caught up with the video where in, I think it's in Canada, where they're trying to now make material from wood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, viscose would be made from wood anyway. Yeah, wood viscose is a cellulose, and it's derived from wood. There are so many exciting new developments, but actually,
other than plastic and poly,
exactly. And but a lot of these are even based on indigenous knowledge. So we've like Pinatex leather, which I believe even maybe indigenous communities might have used in the Pacific Island.
Yeah.
But there's we're looking at so many bio-derived materials that potentially when they come to their end of life go back in as nutrients to the soil. So
that's good. And that must be the case for dyes as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be
Dyes that don't have leads in them, or dyes that that there's better kind of standards against there's a lot to comprehend. And when you start to think like that, you realize how expansive this is, because it actually touches on agriculture, on environmental studies, on the hard sciences, the social sciences.
So. Exactly. So what do you say to a dozen teenage girls who are going to the mall, you know, for the afternoon, and they all want to get new clothes?
Have you tried talking to teenage girls?
They're the consumer's delight.
Yeah, well, I think as well, like, it's really important not to kind of demonize or kind of, you know, I think at certain stages in your life, you're still figuring out who you are. And, you know, a teenager is still trying to figure out their identity. And part of that is kind of trying on different identities. Yeah. And, you know, they're consuming at a different rate. Mm. But I think I would just say to them, maybe they can swap amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they can, you know, have
trendy
heirlooms that are passed down from their family members. Maybe they can make their own. Maybe they can adapt. Maybe they can go secondhand. Or delayed satisfaction is one of the most crucial things. Like, you probably remember garments growing up that you saved up for.
Exactly.
And they're the garments you probably never threw out or at least kept for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So just that instant gratification is sometimes, you know, easy in, easy out. But if you actually,
really,
you know, kind of think about it a little bit. And I think, you know, if you need to be thinking about in long term, so are you going to wear it for 30 times?
30 times. I love that figure.
I would say 300.
I love that.
We had a student many years ago who wore exactly the same brown dress every day.
Wow.
For about a year.
Oh, I wish you hadn't told me it was brown.
Not a big brown.
Terrible color.
Brown's another shade of, it's on the gold spectrum. And nobody even noticed that she was wearing the same. No, because she styled it different every day.
My goodness. That's what my daughter-in-law-to-be, Maria, in Sweden, she and Steve, they took a year of not buying any clothes.
Wow.
Mm. And she has this beautiful dress which belonged to her grandma. It's like a vintage dress. And she wears that with such style all the time.
Ooh,
looks absolutely stunning in it. And that was really good. So they had a problem with their jeans. I think that there were rips and tears. And there was a place, I think, in Stockholm that repairs
Nudie jeans, most likely. Yeah, yeah. They're that kind of business. So we're looking at different types of business models. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no,
but
that's good.
So where there's more like repair, and so the experience of fashion becomes much more extended and expanded. So that they will recycle it, or they will repair it.
Yeah.
So it's not just a once-off purchase. It's like you can go back. Like, I think MacPack do things like that.
I think
here.
So, yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of places
and
that
maybe,
do.
And maybe, we see it with maybe probably the longer established, maybe Swan Dry, you know, that you, like, I think McGee's of Donegal. I used to work for McGee's in Donegal. But they had such a, you know, they used to kind of almost kick themselves because their business model meant that maybe somebody bought a jacket once in their
40
life.
Years ago. They were still getting it repaired.
But if we can open up what can happen to that jacket over the course of its life, maybe it's altered, it's adapted, and that back and forth is also factored into
the whole consumerism has, well, And the thing is that the people working at the coalface are not making any more money because things are getting cheaper
yeah,
and cheaper.
Yeah, that's the thing that keeps that's me a bit awake. Yeah, that's,
I bet.
And it's some studies would show that if we paid a dollar or two more, that it would have huge ramifications for their per item, for their meeting a living wage. Mm. You know, minimum wage isn't always enough to live on.
But anyhow, why don't we have a wee music break?
And this Sounds is good.
I was just telling Jennifer before that I try to listen to, you know, somebody new and different who's come up on the Irish charts. And I discovered Áine Cathail today. Áine is from County Cavan, Ballyhays. And she played GA for Cavan, and she played Camogie in Croke Park.
Wow.
She was telling a little interview that I saw. And then she decided at 16, oh, she's got a very, very beautiful voice. It's kind of like a little bit husky and bluesy to listen to.
Yeah.
But she's very popular in Ireland, and she writes all her own lyrics, and she does covers as well, of course, but she has written this song called Blood Diamonds and really appealed to me. I listened to a few of hers. Some of them are a wee bit dark, but this one is this one's really beautiful.
Blood diamonds are my best friends. I'm keeping them forever. They're with me till the end. I don't really care if no one understands. Got my possessions, don't need nobody else. Pair them with my pearls and all my blood diamond rings.
That was beautiful. What a lovely, lovely singer. I encourage you to go on YouTube and look up Áine Cathail, and plenty of interesting songs. Really lovely. And I'm here today in Capital Irish, broadcasting 106.1 FM. I'm Alice Paul, and I have Jennifer Whitty with me in the studio. And as I said before, Jennifer is Associate Professor of Design and all sorts of other bits and pieces added onto that in Victoria University. Jennifer, how many years have you been in New Zealand, or how did you end up here?
Oh, gosh, yeah, that's a little bit of, that's a long story. But basically, in a nutshell, I'm the fourth generation of my family to have lived in New Zealand.
Truly?
Yeah. Yeah. So my great uncle, my great great uncle, and several of his siblings went to Australia for the gold rush.
Wow.
So my great grandmother and my grandmother's home was built with Australian gold rush money. And so most of them went back to Ireland, but I think one or two stayed on. Mm-hmm. And so my great-great-uncle moved to Auckland, and I think he had a farm up in Papakura. Oh. And then he went back, I believe, in the 1930s. And my grandmother's youngest brother, who wasn't going to inherit the farm, and prospects were looking a little bit slim, he came back with that great-uncle to New Zealand. So they had a farm in Papakura. And then he retired, I think, in St. Helier's. And sadly, then my parents were quite intrepid in the 90s, late 80s, 90s. And my dad was named after that uncle. So my family have always grown up with stories about New Zealand.
That's
and
lovely.
New Zealand's always been this place of interest and fascination and a kind of second home across the world. And so my parents came over with us as a family, and we lived here for 3 years.
That's right. How old were you then?
I'll be showing my age. not to worry, but yeah, I was 10 when we moved. I was just turning 11. Yeah.
I remember you telling me that you went to St. Peter's and Paul's school for a year or two.
And I'm afraid we lasted one day.
Oh.
Yeah. We ran out crying.
Crying. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
We found it really hardcore. Maybe it was almost like Vatican II.
I'd say you were right in the 90s, you know, coming from Ireland.
Very hellfire and brimstone. Ireland seems so, I grew up in Port Marnock, North County, Dublin.
Ah, well, there you go.
And, oh my God, our priest was just so progressive. Yeah, it was really, really a very inclusive.
It was stepping back to the 50s then when you came here.
Yeah, 40s or 50s, definitely. Yeah.
Thankfully, it's moved on.
I'm sure it's different now.
So you were just there for 3 years and then back home to Ireland?
Yeah, we did. We did Papua New Guinea on the way. Yeah, my dad worked for the Civil Aviation Authority here. And they moved us from Wellington to Christchurch and back up again. And we kind of felt at that point that, it was too disruptive and, the family at home wanted us back. So, we returned.
And so then you were going to jump to you going to university to study design. Where did you study, Jennifer?
Yeah, I studied initially at Limerick School of Art and Design.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I did, yeah. So, I was in Old Magdalen Laundry, on the Clare Road.
Gee.
Part of LIT, so what was the Institute of Technology, which is now what Munster Technological University.
Yeah.
But it was quite an imposing building with a lot of history.
If only the walls could speak.
Oh, God, and I'm not sure if we'd need quite a few boxes of tissues. Yeah, some pretty horrific stuff.
So after you graduated from there, you went to...
We took a year out, most of us, because our degree was very strong on working in industry.
Oh,
and getting global, getting experience. Yeah. So most of us
was
took the year out. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it was really good to get that balance. And where did I worked and lived in Paris and Dublin, working for a number of designers. And then at that point, I returned. It was easier to stay in Dublin. And I remained in Dublin for my final year in NCID, National College of Art and Design.
Yeah.
And then over to London, another couple of years working in industry. And then I did my master's in the Royal College of Art in London.
Wow. Mm. What a career. And then where did you bump into Cahill? That always interests me.
We'll get the balance of the work and play. funnily enough, actually, in the West.
In the West of Ireland.
Yeah.
Marion's cheering at that one.
Where were we? We were in Clare. Yeah, a little bit more south. I was Lahinch or Kilkee? Lahinch, I think it was. I was meant to
Not
be surfing.
Varna.
No, I think we did go through there during the day.
I'm just joking. For the matchmakers.
Oh, sorry, I'm not yet. I didn't pick up on the... I was just thinking about singing there. I'm thinking... but no, we were surfing and he was on a stag and Oh. I always joke that I jumped out of the cake.
I love it.
Joking.
That's great. Yeah. So he's from Knock?
My partner, he's from, I had to think, Maynooth in Kildare.
But his
mum's side, the O'Briens, are, you know, Munster originally. Cork, but grew up in Clare, and then his dad's side would be Knock, Mayo.
Yeah. Well, listeners will love this story because it's a great story of an Irish woman coming and ending up being the professor, associate professor in Victoria University. It's lovely. It's really great. So in your, you know, the degree you teach, what... Marion's given me the sign that we've only got a minute left. Do you have to quickly tell me what you teach your students?
I teach across the School of Design, so I'm really lucky that I teach into, there's 8 different design disciplines. Mm. So I teach across them, and I just did a little module in global studies, so looking at supply chain. So because fashion intersects with so many subjects, from the social sciences to the hard sciences to politics to economics to business to and design is a medium to activate some of those subjects. So it is to put into practice theories or concepts that potentially will make the world
a bit better,
we hope.
Isn't it a great position to be in, to be teaching something like this to the young people?
It keeps you making a difference. Because someone asked me to join a book club, and I probably read all day, every day.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God. But yeah, no, there's just so much to learn and to know. And there's, you know, and I think we're changing our perspective and position.
And young people want to know, they have a different... approach, I think, to learning as well.
Yeah, very much so.
They want to know what's going to make the world a better place.
Yeah, and knowing how to put that learning into learning that relates to their lives as well. So we try to meet them where they're at and what their interests are.
Because,
you know, school or university is so, so different to what it was even 5 years ago. COVID has completely changed everything again. I would say every 3 years, the generation is very, very different, and how we teach is really different. But COVID, again, is just fast-tracked.
You have to keep up with that change.
Oh,
Jennifer, we could talk forever.
We
need another hour, but Marion is very, very decisive here, and she's waving the finger and the watch. She has to kindly wind things up. So thanks a million for coming in today,
Jennifer. No
problem
at all.
Thank you
so much for inviting me, Alice.
It was a real pleasure to have
you
on the show.
You never know, I might come back.
We'd love you to. We really would.
That
would be fantastic. And we were going to finish up with the Galway Girl, only because my little kids' singing group have been learning to sing this, and they loved it. You should see them shouting out and singing it. So if any of you have little kids between the age of 4 and 12 who'd like to join our singing group at the Hutt Valley Irish Society, we do it every second Sunday from 3 to 4, and just give me an email or a call. Off we go. Thank you for listening, and slán agus beannacht.
I took a stroll on the old long walk of the day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk on a fine soft day. And I asked my friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair is black and her eyes are blue. And I knew right then I've been taking the world. A salt hill prime with a Galway girl.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.